witness tampering and await sentencing for that conviction. And two others were also convicted on the federal charge and pleaded guilty to state charges, will avoid trial, but they are all possibly expected to serve time in prison. In this last minute that we have, Amber, the response of the family at what they're calling for at this point.
Well, I just want to also add that Demetrius Haley was found guilty of excessive force, deliberate interference for medical intervention, and witness tampering, not just witness tampering. And he's facing up to life in federal prison.
Well, Amber Sherman, I want to thank you so much for being with us. Community organizer, member of the initial Black Lives Matter Memphis chapter, host of the podcast, The Law According to Amber. We have 15 seconds, the message from his family.
We want justice for Tyree, and that looks like abolishing the police.
I want to thank you so much for being with us from Memphis, Tennessee. Memphis, Tennessee, where Dr. Martin Luther King was assassinated April 4th, 1968. That does it for our show. Democracy Now! Is currently accepting applications for a director of technology to lead our broadcast digital IT operations. Learn more and apply at democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman. This is another edition of Democracy Now!
You are tuned into listener-supported community radio, KBOO Portland.
Hey there, relatives. We missed you, and I know you missed us. Rosity Native Radio is returning to the airwaves starting May 15th. Nick and I will be back in the saddle again to bring you all the Indigenous news, music, and more. So stay tuned, 90.7 FM, Thursdays from 6 to 7 p.m.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934, and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. The Finance Committee meets on the third Thursday of the month at 5:30 p.m. This month's meeting will be held online through a public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting can be found at our website at kboo.fm. Please visit our website to verify if a meeting is being held.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, an underwater volcano off the Oregon coast is primed for eruption.
Federal budget cuts threaten upkeep of the Pacific Crest Trail.
And the Portland Pickles sue Disney for copyright infringement.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Friday, May 9th, 2025. I'm Sam Bowman.
And I'm Josh Salem. An underwater volcano that's about 300 miles off the coast of Oregon has demonstrated significant recent activity. Experts predict it will erupt sometime between now and the end of the year. The volcano is known as Axial Seamount. There's been an increase in recent nearby earthquakes around it and a swelling of the volcano itself. Bill Chadwick, a volcanologist and research professor at Oregon State University, has been using a network of sensors on the seafloor to monitor the volcano. Over the past few months, the instruments have picked up an increase in associated activity. In late March and early April, researchers were recording more than 1,000 earthquakes a day, and the swelling demonstrates the volcano is filling with molten rock. Chadwick recently said, quote, "This volcano is similar to the ones in Hawaii that erupt very fluid lava. They tend to inflate like a balloon in between eruptions. At Axial, the seafloor is actually rising, and that's a big signal," end quote. Unlike with Hawaii's volcanoes, there's no real danger to humans if Axial Seamount does explode. It's quite far from land, and the peak is submerged about a mile deep underwater. Even a strong eruption would be undetectable there. Axial Seamount formed in what's known as a hotspot, where plumes of molten rock rise from Earth's mantle into the crust. Hotspot volcanoes dot the seafloor, and some even create island chains like Hawaii and Samoa. It's unusual in that it's located right at the boundary between the Pacific Plate and the Juan de Fuca tectonic plates. Those massive plates are moving apart. The separation of the plates is constantly fueling volcanic activity and producing fresh ocean crust in the region. Chadwick has been tracking activity at Axial Seamount for the past 30 years. Over that period, the volcano has erupted 3 times. He and his colleagues are testing whether repeating patterns of activity can produce reliable predictions of when the underwater volcano is ready to explode. Volcanoes can behave in unpredictable ways, and depending on the type, they can exhibit very different warning signs. Scientists have had some success with short-term forecasts, usually just a few hours ahead of an eruption, that have helped local officials decide whether to evacuate areas or take other precautions. Longer-term forecasts have remained challenging.
Maintenance projects on the Pacific Crest Trail, which winds through Washington, Oregon, and California, are being canceled. Uncertainty around federal public land grants and big proposed cuts to federal land management agencies means that access to the iconic trail is threatened. Suzanne Potter has more.
Access to the beloved Pacific Crest Trail may soon be limited due to a drop in federal grants and big layoffs proposed for federal public lands agencies. In the next 2 weeks, the Trump administration is expected to release the reduction in force targets for the National Park Service, the U.S. Forest Service, and the Bureau of Land Management. Megan Wargo with the Pacific Crest Trail Association says federal grant money dried up last October, so they've had to cancel 56 weeks of crew maintenance work on the trails.
If large sections of the trails are forced to be closed because of this lack of maintenance and care, that's devastating that folks won't be able to access their public lands because of these cuts.
Volunteers help keep the trails clear of debris and repair erosion from storm damage. The Pacific Crest Trail runs more than 2,600 miles from Mexico to Canada. It includes landscapes from Anza Borrego in the south to Sequoia, Kings Canyon, and Lake Tahoe in the Sierras and points north. Wargo says the National Trails System Act calls for a public-private partnership to manage the national scenic trails. The Pacific Crest Trail Association normally gets between $667,000 and $1 million per year in federal funding, about a quarter of what it needs to help maintain the PCT.
Typically, that breakdown is about 25% value that's coming from the federal government, while the other 75% is coming through private donations and that volunteer service hour value.
Wargo adds that cuts to the federal workforce hobble agencies' abilities to make grants and approve volunteer projects, and that means less brush gets cleared, raising the risk of wildfires in California. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter.
A new species of electric cable bacteria was found in Newport, Oregon, in Yaquina Bay. Cable bacteriology is still considered relatively new science, as the agents were first discovered in 2012 in Denmark. They became known for their electric properties, which is a rare trait for bacteria. Researchers have collaborated with the Confederated Tribes of Siletz Indians to dub the bacteria C.A. electrix ngingonensis. Chang Li, postdoctoral researcher from Oregon State University, said, quote, "It's important to honor the original inhabitants of the land where this unique cable bacteria was found," end quote. The name honors the Yangona tribal people, whom the Siletz tribe historically descended from and have inhabited the area for centuries. Lee said, quote, "Naming an ecologically important bacterium after a tribe recognizes its historical bond with the land and acknowledges its enduring contributions to ecological knowledge and sustainability," end quote. Cable bacteria can live under diverse climate conditions and can be found in various environments, including fresh and salt waters. While conducting research, scientists have found that these bacteria could hold and transfer electricity for long periods of time that could become the link between organism and technology. Although the exact usage for this bacteria is still being explored, researchers have high hopes that this can benefit different fields. These strands have also shown to perform reduction-oxidation reactions over long distances, bringing oxygen to areas without, and optimizing metabolism in it, which could be promising for food safety, medicine, and environmental cleanup. Lee says, quote, "These bacteria can transfer electrons to clean up pollutants, so they could be used to remove harmful substances from sediments. Also, their design of a highly conductive nickel protein can possibly inspire new bioelectronics. End quote.
An Oregon bill would allow more drone use for law enforcement. Senate Bill 238 would give law enforcement agencies more authority to use drones without a warrant. The bill passed in the Senate with bipartisan support and is now being considered in the State House. Under current law, police can use drones under certain circumstances, like during training or for search and rescue missions. In most cases, law enforcement agencies need a warrant to fly a drone unless there are urgent circumstances. SB 238 would expand those permissions, which means allowing drones to be used in a wider range of situations without a warrant. This bill allows police and sheriffs to make decisions about the use of drones without judicial accountability. More than 100 Oregonians wrote testimony opposing this bill. According to their testimony, people oppose the bill because of concerns over privacy, free speech, and the right to organize without government intrusion and spying, as well as a fear that police will abuse drone usage and violate Oregonians' state constitutional rights against unreasonable searches. The 21 written testimonies that support the bill are almost all from police departments in Oregon saying that the drones will be a huge help in keeping communities safe.
On this Mother's Day weekend, a new report shows mothers, on average, spend much more time caregiving than fathers, which results in moms passing up annual U.S. earnings totaling $450 billion. As Kathleen Shannon reports, caregiving challenges are exacerbated in rural places like Montana.
Sunday is Mother's Day, and what moms may need most is a day off. Research shows that inequities persist in the amount of time moms and dads spend on childcare. In 2023, American mothers spent on average 167% more time on primary caregiving than fathers. And the Institute for Women's Policy Research says that costs a mom nearly $17,000 per year and $450 billion nationwide in foregone income. The Institute's chief economist, Kate Bond, says the trend continues with secondary childcare or supervising children while multitasking. Mothers spend 133% more time doing so than fathers.
That is not time you can go into an office. That is not time where you can be out of the house. And so that is time where you also still can't work for earnings. So mothers are really constrained by their disproportionate caregiving responsibility.
Data show in Montana, mothers make 59% of what fathers make per year, a difference of nearly $25,000. The inequities are worse among Native American moms in the state, whose pay is about half the earnings of white fathers. Bond adds rural families may face extra barriers.
If we're thinking about all the constraints that shape how women decide to engage in the labor market, it can be things like driving distance to a job, access to child care services for your children.
A bill to help support child care workers in Montana passed both chambers of the state legislature and could get to the governor's desk. It would expand eligibility for the Best Beginnings Child Care Scholarship Program to include child care workers, who are some of the state's lowest paid workers. I'm Kathleen Shannon with Big Sky Connection.
In national news, a judge orders certification of the 2024 North Carolina Supreme Court race. Wisconsin Democrats want congressional maps redrawn, and the interim U.S. Attorney for the District of Columbia loses the job over his support for January 6th rioters. With more on those stories, it's Catherine Carley with 2025 Talks.
Welcome to 2025 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
We cannot let what happened in 2020, what happened here in 2024, keep happening again and again. And I will continue to fight until my fight is done, and then I will continue to defend and uphold the Constitution after that.
North Carolina Supreme Court Justice Allison Riggs says democracy has prevailed in the last uncertified election from 2024, following an unprecedented legal effort by her Republican challenger to toss more than 65,000 legally cast ballots. A federal judge has ordered the election be certified. Two recounts showed Riggs won her race by more than 700 votes. In Wisconsin, Democrats are asking their Supreme Court to throw out the state's congressional map. Just 1 month after an election gave liberals control of the court through 2028, a group of voters filed suit, claiming current district lines give Republicans an unfair advantage. But Waukesha County Circuit Court Judge Brad Schimmel, who lost that race, says Democrats are trying to game the system.
Where they fail at the ballot box when it's a legislative race, they can't get their policies through. So now their focus is, if you get the courts, now you can get the laws you want made by the courts. And that's wrong.
Although the state typically has an even partisan split, Republicans now hold 6 of 8 congressional seats there. President Donald Trump is withdrawing his nomination of interim U.S. Attorney Ed Martin for D.C. to take the job permanently. Martin's close association with a neo-Nazi and support for January 6th rioters lost him support in the Senate. Republican North Carolina Senator Tom Tillis says the Capitol riot is a red line.
If Mr. Martin were being put forth as a U.S. attorney for any district except the district where January 6th happened, the protests happened, I'd probably support him, but not in this district.
Trump has now tapped Fox host and former judge Jeanine Pirro for the job. West Virginia is the latest state to tighten voter ID rules, eliminating several non-photo forms of identification which were previously accepted, including Social Security cards or utility bills. Signing the new law, Governor Patrick Morrissey says there have been 13 documented cases of voter fraud there since 2020.
Thankfully, though, we're a law and order state, and if you commit a crime, you are going to be held accountable. And that certainly includes crimes related to our elections.
Meanwhile, Indiana election officials are facing a federal lawsuit over a new state law which prevents students from using their college IDs to vote. And C-SPAN is asking the Supreme Court to allow cameras in the courtroom next week when justices hear oral arguments on birthright citizenship. The court has consolidated 3 cases challenging a Trump bid to end the constitutional right for nearly all children born on U.S. soil. I'm Catherine Carley for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to the KABU Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for Counterspin. It's 6, it's Rising Up with Sonali. Then it's 7, Once Upon a Time. Tonight's weather will show partly cloudy skies. The low will be 49. Tomorrow's weather will be mostly cloudy, with a high around 70. Today in history, in 1960, the United States FDA approved birth control, a key aspect of second wave feminism. The quote of the day is from Scottish author of Peter Pan, J.M. Barrie, who said, "Those who bring sunshine into the lives of others cannot keep it from themselves."
In Wyoming, protections for indigenous art are at risk as state lawmakers and the Trump administration pursue opposite tracks when it comes to these works of art. With that story and more, it's Antonia Gonzalez with National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Protections for indigenous rock art in Wyoming are in limbo after state lawmakers and the Trump administration took potentially conflicting actions related to them. Kathleen Shannon has more.
Senate File 91, which handily passed the state legislature, increased the penalties for any kind of petroglyph or pictograph site destruction to a $750 fine and up to 6 months in prison. This, as the Interior Department fast-tracked energy projects through a decades-old legal review of such sites. Tribal Historic Preservation Officer for the Northern Arapaho Tribe, Crystal Seabering, says she used to have 30 days to comment on a project, but now has 7.
In terms of tribes, our sacred sites and our places of significance, that's our history on the ground. It's not in books, it's on the land. So it's really important for tribes to have that voice in there to protect those sites.
The original Wyoming bill included nearly $500,000 for the state's Department of State Parks and Cultural Resources to survey and make 3D models of Wyoming's petroglyphs, but it was ultimately cut. According to a State of the Art 2024 report, Of the nearly 1,100 indigenous rock art sites across Wyoming, about one quarter have been vandalized or defaced. Beyond Wyoming's borders, Seabering says her office provides legally mandated consultation on any projects in her tribe's ancestral migratory territory, which includes portions of 17 states. She says she takes on hundreds of requests.
That 30-day window was barely enough time. So now we have to kind of prioritize those so we can push them through. But it's a challenge.
Seabering notes the office is allowed to request more time to review projects, giving consultants some leeway. I'm Kathleen Shannon.
When Native-owned businesses first begin navigating the market, it can be a challenge. However, one organization is providing more than financial support to business owners. South Dakota Public Broadcasting CJ Keene checks in.
The Four Bands Community Fund offers support alongside loans for Indigenous-owned businesses, and these programs directly impact the lives of Cheyenne River tribal members. Members like Bonnie LeBeau, who use their resources to successfully grow her quilt-making business.
Being a new entrepreneur, you're kind of learning everything as you go. You know, I believe I was probably taking college courses at the time also for business, but the college business curriculum doesn't prepare you for entrepreneurship.
Assistance like credit management, business planning, and loan assistance. Assistance LeBeau says was vital to the success of her business.
It's so easy. They're accessible to the community. And I think that's what it makes it not so intimidating. And I don't think that there's any other programs that are able to help entrepreneurs in a hands-on way that Four Bands does.
Now, LeBeau says she hopes to use her loan money to expand her business's workplace. The first Four Bands program was CREATE, Cheyenne River Entrepreneurial Assistance Training and Education. Under that program, LeBeau and other locals have managed to revitalize the Cheyenne River economy. According to Four Bands, prior to their programs, less than 1% of businesses in Cheyenne River were Native-owned in a community that was 75% Indigenous.
That was CJ Keene reporting. A bill to create a statewide alert system for missing Indigenous people passed the Arizona legislature this week. ABC 15 reports the bill passed the House by a vote of 57-0. Lawmakers believe such an alert system may have helped in the case of Emily Pike, a Native teen who went missing and was later found dead. The turquoise alert, also known as Emily's Law, was sent to the state's governor for approval. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
Retired Supreme Court Justice David H. Souter has died at the age of 85. Souter passed away yesterday at his home in New Hampshire, according to an official court statement. Souter was appointed by Republican President George H.W. Bush in 1990. Despite being previously affiliated with the Republican Party, he was a reliably liberal vote on abortion, church-state relations, freedom of expression, and the accessibility of federal courts. He retired in June of 2009, giving President Barack Obama his first Supreme Court vacancy to fill. Obama, a Democrat, chose Sonia Sotomayor, the court's first Latina justice. Souter was the 105th Supreme Court justice and only its sixth bachelor. He was a noted hard worker, attending his duties 7 days a week through most of the court's term from October to early summer and staying at his Supreme Court office for more than 12 hours a day. Souter rented an apartment a few miles from the court and regularly jogged alone at Fort McNair, an army installation nearby. He was once mugged while on a run, an apparently random act. Shortly after his retirement, Souter bought a Cod-style home in Hoppington, New Hampshire. It was reported that he worried the foundation of the house would give way under the weight of all the books he owned. In retirement, Souter warned that ignorance of how government works could undermine American democracy. He said a few years ago, quote, "What I worry about is that when problems are not addressed, people will not know who is responsible. And when the problems get bad enough, some one person will come forward and say, 'Give me total power and I will solve this problem.' That's how the Roman Republic fell." End quote.
The Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation will close by 2045, Bill Gates says. The billionaire also says he will commit the remainder of his fortune to charity. This announcement comes 3 months after Gates urged President Trump to continue foreign aid disbursements by the U.S. Agency for International Development, or USAID. USAID was effectively shuttered by Elon Musk in February. Gates worried about recreating the agency's work and said, quote, Getting these those people out there in their depth of experience, that's an asset that would be very hard to recreate, end quote. On Thursday, Gates highlighted how Musk's cuts to the federal agency would lead directly to the deaths of children. Speaking to the Financial Times, Gates said it's not a pretty picture. Quote, "The world's richest man killing the world's poorest children. I'd love for him to go in and meet the children that have now been infected with HIV because he cut that money," end quote. Yesterday was the nonprofit foundation's 25th anniversary. Gates used the occasion to announce he would be giving the remainder of his own fortune to his foundation faster than originally planned. Gates said, quote, "There are too many urgent problems to solve for me to hold on to resources that could be used to help people," end quote. The Gates Foundation has faced criticism for pushing industrial models of agricultural development, specifically in Africa, where a much more community-based model has been used for many generations. Food and water are increasingly commodified by major corporations everywhere farmers' basic needs have traditionally come from neighboring farms and families. This new dependence on outside business interests is a major cultural shift and will contribute to the loss of biodiversity as far fewer varieties of seed get planted. Bill Gates and other donors haven't wavered in their support for this top-down corporate-led model, portraying it as charity, according to Ashley Fent, producer of Rich Appetites, a documentary about how big philanthropy is affecting the future of food in Africa. Fent said, quote, "The only ones who appear to be truly winning are the companies who profit from this system, as farmer-led systems are eroded," end quote. The Gates Foundation expects another $200 billion by 2045, both from its endowment and from Bill Gates' continued personal donations.
Howard University's Kings of Campus initiative tackles the national decline in black male enrollment at historically black colleges and universities by fostering mentorship in middle and high school students. Data show participation dropping from 38% in the 1970s to just 26% today. Tramell Gomes has more.
As historically black colleges and universities grapple with declining black male enrollment, Howard University's Kings of Campus initiative is working to reverse the trend through mentorship, exposure, and addressing systemic barriers. Now in its third year, the program targets middle and high school students in partnership with school districts to build a pipeline for young black men to see themselves in higher education. Nationally, black male enrollment at HBCUs has dropped from 38% in the late 1970s to 26% today, with Howard's black male population at 19%. Calvin Hadley is Howard's assistant provost for student engagement and academic partnerships. He says the issue needs to be addressed swiftly.
We are really a clarion call for the world, right? Because there's a significant concentration here and we're able to feel this a little bit more, but it's really just illuminating what is a national issue. And so I think we've been able to dive deeper into that. We've known about this and have been working on this.
Howard's model offers a blueprint for Mississippi, where HBCUs such as Jackson State and Alcorn State face similar challenges, with black men underrepresented in higher education nationwide. Advocates stress that solutions must extend beyond individual institutions. The initiative focuses on combating the belief gap, or the disparity between what black male students can achieve and what educators often expect of them. Through events such as barbershop talks and a burning of fears ceremony, Hadley says the program fosters self-efficacy and community.
We're dedicated to addressing this issue that didn't originate with us, and it likely is not going to end with us. But we know that if we can create best practices, if we can better understand what is taking place around the country and create partnerships, collaborate, etc., we do believe that we can make a significant impact in this.
The decline has broader implications. Research by economist Raj Chetty highlights how black male educational outcomes disproportionately affect economic mobility and the racial wealth gap. Howard's efforts, including year-round mentorship and campus visits, aim to address these disparities early. Support for this reporting was provided by Lumina Foundation. This is Tramell Gomes for Mississippi News Connection.
The Portland Pickles baseball team is suing Disney for copyright infringement. The Pickles are a college woodbat summer league team that have a big presence around town, in part due to their mascot, Dylan T. Pickle. Now the Pickles are suing Disney over a very similar team logo and mascot featured in one of their Pixar animated series. The show Win or Lose features a softball team called the Peak Valley Pickles, who wear green and white jerseys that sport similar logos and graphics to the Portland team. Previously, the owner of the Portland Pickles said legal action would be a last resort, offering to meet Disney halfway. The lawsuit against Disney says the entertainment giant is infringing on the Pickles trademark and confusing fans by selling Peak Valley Pickles merchandise. The lawsuit argues Disney is using its, quote, outsized market power to copy the Pickles intentionally and erode their brand.
Now we go to The Point Puzzle, a weekly radio brain teaser produced by Pearl Stark at KPOV Bend. This week's puzzle is about honoring someone.
It's time for the puzzle.
Last week, we had a puzzle about May Day, the distress signal. I asked you to send me two one-syllable words that each might be used to indicate a predicament. Swap their initial sounds, and you get two written ways to communicate. My intended answer was to be in a spot, or jam, which becomes jot and spam. I also accepted mire and whale, which becomes wire and mail. Our winner this week is Daryl McKeel, who listens to KYAQ in Newport, Oregon.
Once again, I'm stuck in here. Once again.
For the new puzzle, what is a word for someone being honored, and also what they might be honored with? So again, a single word that might be someone being honored, but also what they might be honored with. When you have an answer, send your name, your answer, and the station in which you hear the puzzle to puzzle@kpov.org. I'll select one winner from among any answers received by this Saturday. This has been Pearl Stark with your Point Puzzle for the week of May 5th. The Point Puzzle is produced at KPOV, High Desert Community Radio.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News for Friday, May 9th, 2020.